I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to The Connection. Philadelphia is known for many things, including its beautiful and bold murals. They're everywhere. While creating these canvases involves a team of artists, organizers, and local residents, the mastermind has been Jane Golden, the founder and executive director of Mural Arts Philadelphia. She is a force to be reckoned with, as anyone who has ever worked with her will tell you. She's utterly devoted to the power of art to change lives. I sat down with Jane Golden earlier this week for an event at WHYY with an audience filled with Jane fans. We talked about her passion for murals, her dogged personality, and her plans for the future. Well, Jane Golden really needs no introduction. Her imprint on Philadelphia is everywhere, with more than 4,000 murals all over the city and more waiting to be completed. It's really an astonishing accomplishment. For 40-plus years, she's been the driving force behind turning walls and building facades into beautiful living canvases, making public art a truly public experience. For Jane, murals are about community engagement, about social values, about connection, about telling stories about the people who live in the city's distinct and vibrant neighborhoods. Her mantra is, art ignites change. A little history. Back in the 1980s, Mayor Wilson Good launched the Anti-Graffiti Network to redirect taggers to more constructive and legal activities. Jane was hired as a part-timer and turned that job into a full-time position by organizing local youth to paint a mural in what was the blighted Spring Garden Bridge. They did it in 3 weeks, and she got that full-time job. She stayed with the Anti-Graffiti Network until it shut down. A few years later, she pitched the idea of mural arts to Mayor Ed Rendell, and the rest, you can say, is history. Now, several mayors later, Mural Arts Philadelphia focuses on public art and its preservation, on youth education, on restorative justice, on mental and behavioral health and wellness. As you probably know, Jane Golden has announced her retirement in July. No easy decision for her. In fact, she told my colleague Peter Crimmins that she still loves her job and is ambivalent about stepping down, which we will get to. I want to talk to Jane about how a girl from Margate, New Jersey, made Philadelphia into the mural capital of the country, if not the world. So let's give a big WHYY, a big Philly welcome to Jane Golden. Do you feel it?
I do. Thank you. It's great.
I read a lot about Jane and mural arts in preparation for this interview, but I really wanted to know more about you. And I was intrigued that you grew up in what I think of as a summer town. Mm-hmm. What kind of memories do you have of being a kid in Margate, New Jersey?
Well, first I want to say it's thrilling to be here. I'm a huge fan. I just adore you. And thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. So I want to start with gratitude. Growing up in Margate was really paradise. Our house was not that far from the beach. We did not like Philadelphians. but it was like we were like a beach family. I used to surf.
Really?
Not well, but in a very determined fashion.
I'm sure you did.
And the boy surfers would tease me, and I'd say, shut up, and drag this 9-foot-long board down the beach. And we had a sailboat, and then we had a catamaran, and I walked on the beach all the time year-round. Like the seasons were very important to us because the way the beach looked and felt was just in our soul, you know. But I would say that I was sort of a strange kid. I was an introvert who lived in my own world, read a lot. I wanted to be a detective for a number of years.
Really?
I had a very active spy
solve
club.
Crimes, basically. Mm-hmm. Solve crimes.
Yeah, I went to solve crimes. I was in third grade. We belonged to a pool club at the Traymore Hotel in Atlantic City, and that's where I started the spy club. I was 007, and if people didn't do what they were supposed to, they lost points. So my brother ended up being 00-10.
Oh, dear.
So, but it was like an enchanting environment, and I started painting watercolors at a young age, and of course the environment was very inspiring.
Well, let me ask you, as you said, you were kind of a shy kid, but I don't think we think of you as a shy adult. Was there something that made you the kind of powerhouse that you are today?
I think I started to come into my own in high school and then in college. I was probably moving down to Los Angeles because it was like a hard move. I really didn't know very many people and had to really reinvent myself. And then I think it just pushed me into a place that was uncomfortable. And then when I started painting murals, I felt actually a great deal of comfort.
Yeah.
And I think that, and I also had this boss, her name is Judy Baca, and she's an incredible artist and activist, and she spoke truth to power, and she was so bold. And many of the muralists then were men, and so I was very inspired. She was like a role model for me. And then more and more, I like just started to feel like that there, you know, I could really trust what I was thinking.
Your dad had some discount stores he ran or owned, mm-hmm. and your mom was a painter, was a watercolorist. What kind of influence did they have on you as an artist, as a kid growing up?
Well, I'd say they had a huge influence on me as a human being. I mean, my dad was incredibly creative. He wrote short stories and poetry in college, but he was also a businessman, and he started a chain of stores called the China Outlet Gourmet Garage. He was like, had a populist philosophy of retail. He thought people should be able to buy great things for a really good price. And he was like super creative, just always on fire with ideas. And my mom was a great watercolor painter. And so they inspired me from the time I was young that I loved art and that I should pursue it. And so when I was in high school, I used to come up to Philly on Saturday mornings and come to the Philadelphia Museum of Art and take painting classes. And, you know, they were always, but my dad was, they were very disciplined, though. They were like, if you're going to do this, you have to do it, you know, do it over and over and over again. And when I was young, see, this is the deal, I dropped out of Hebrew school.
Oh.
It was scandalous.
I think you're forgiven, but yes.
But he said, though, you have to really, I took piano lessons and art. He said, if you want to make it as an artist, you have to work all the time. And so I painted, like in a frenzy. And then in 7th and 8th grade, he encouraged me to submit my work to the Boardwalk Art Show, but it was really for high school students. And I was very competitive. That was the other thing about me. I was hyper competitive. That's hard to believe, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Shocker. and so I remember the first year I won a prize, and the second year I didn't. And he goes, well, we should walk up and see who won the prize. I'm like, no. Just really well adjusted. So, but then, you know, and I always wanted to be, I was like, had to be an A student. My brother is a wonderful person. He's much more well adjusted than myself.
A little bit, couple years younger than
you. The other thing is my parents had a great sense of humor, and humor was very important in our family, and my brother is very funny. He's sort of like Jon Stewart. So, I mean, but it was a great family. I felt really blessed. I mean, they were just inspiring. Oh, my dad always said, you have to remember to be gracious, to be grateful, and to have humility, no matter where you are and what you're doing. And those words have been, his words always are in my head, no matter where I am.
There's a wonderful story about you and a mural in Santa Monica where you decided, you saw a wall, I guess. I don't want to take your story away from you, but you created one of the early murals of your career, maybe even Santa Monica, and somehow got Jane Fonda to make the announcement about the mural. First of all, what was the mural of, and how did you get her to do that?
The mural was of the old Ocean Park Pier. When I moved to L.A., it was a very solitary experience because it was, first of all, I would get lost because of all the freeways, and then, I mean, everybody seemed to be blonde. I was like, what's going on here? And no one looked like they were aging. I was like, this is strange. The earth is standing still in Los Angeles. So I was just like, I'm not sure what to do. So then, left to my own devices, this is what I do. So I signed up for yoga, modern dance. I can't dance at all. I took drawing classes. I just became a busy bee. I got a studio, like my professor said. I painted, and I got a job that was really boring. And then I read about this mural program in Los Angeles, the LA mural program. It was called Spark. And so I decided to apply to do a mural because I loved murals and painted large. I had never done murals. I was not honest on my application to them. I said I'd done murals all over Stanford's campus.
I love how you slip that in.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And then I called them every day for months. I just called them and called them and called them. I'm like, I have to be relentless because otherwise they kept telling me no. And I'm like, don't tell me no. And so finally they called and said, you know, is this Jane Golden? I'm like, yes. They said, well, we hope we never hear from you again, like ever.
Really?
Like, and so I got this grant, $300, to do a giant wall. Painted the mural, but really had to teach myself how to do a mural. Had a nice group of women artists who were working with me. And when it was finished, people were like, oh, you should get someone famous to dedicate it. I'm like, I'm, 22 from New Jersey, and I don't know anybody famous. They said, well, Jane Fonda lives up the street. So I said, where? And they said, well, that's her house. They walked me, and then they said, that house right there. So I just went up and knocked on the door. I was covered in paint. And she answered. And I was like, oh, Jane. I said, hi. And she's, hi. I said, I'm Jane Golden. She goes, I know who you are. I'm like, you do? And she said, I've been watching you and the other women working on that mural, and I'm just so proud. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I said, well, would you cut the ribbon at the mural dedication? And she said, sure. And she goes, is there anything else that I could do? So I was like, you could bring friends. Isn't that an odd thing to say?
How about some money, right?
I know. Well, now I say to my colleagues, I would have asked for a donation. But then it was like, I thought to myself, oh, she must be quite popular. So I said, would you bring friends? Right. So, and she did. And we have old pictures of the dedication with like so many people cheering this work of art that I didn't think was great, but it was very nostalgic for people. And it was recreating an important part of Santa Monica's history that had been lost.
So even Jane Fonda does not say no to Jane Golden, right?
But then I would see her around Santa Monica, and I would say, hi, Jane. And she'd say, hi, Jane. And my friends would go, ooh, first name basis with Jane Fonda.
Oh, my gosh. So you graduated from Stanford with a degree. I guess you studied both art and politics. So
little
maybe a fork in the road about what you were going to do with the rest of your life. But you also got diagnosed with lupus at around this time, which, of course, is a painful disease, if I can use that word, that you still struggle with today. What did that diagnosis mean to you back then?
Well, first it was really mysterious because I started to not feel well. I couldn't move my hands very well. And then I developed a rash over my face. It can be quite disfiguring at times. And they said, you have like a pre-leukemic condition. Like they had all kinds of, they were diagnosing it wrong. I think back then they just didn't know that much about lupus.
Yeah.
And then finally I went in for a test and this doctor said to me, has anyone ever talked to you about lupus?
Wow.
So I said, I've never heard the term. So then they did a number of tests and they said, you have lupus. But by that time I was pretty sick. And so I had to be given IV prednisone. I think the more startling thing was when, the doctor was like, look, people with lupus don't live very long. And I was just like, what do you mean?
They said that to you?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't, like, because when you're that young, you don't really, and so I had been living in L.A. for a couple years when this happened. So, I mean, you just don't think about your mortality. And so it was, like, just shocking to me. And I was just really sick. And so I just felt like, and my parents felt I needed to come back east.
Right.
So it was just turning away from what was, a nice life in Los Angeles. Now, I didn't quite love L.A., and eventually maybe I would have left, but at this that just everything was sped up because of that. And I came back to Margate. I was living at home. So it felt in a way like a failure. And it was a very depressing part of my life.
I can only imagine. You got treatment at Hahnemann Hospital.
Yes, I went up to Hahnemann.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, how do you feel today? I mean, here, you know, you're still with us.
Good. I feel good. I'm very healthy. I work out every day. And like, but I feel, I think the lesson was to learn to make peace with it.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't going to go away. It would go in and out of remission. So what I sort of made a decision was that I would just have to find meaning in my life and take care of myself. Like I had there were some things that I just had to do,
right.
But I couldn't dwell on it too much because I felt like this just didn't feel right. And I felt like I just needed to, my lupus doctor, he calls me a non-compliant patient, but I'm not, like, it's not, like, that bad, non-compliant, but I am sort of non-compliant because it is somewhat denial, but not total denial. I had, there's that middle ground that I had to find. But I feel like the best thing that happened to me, honestly, was getting hired by the Anti-Graffiti Network.
Well,
that was my big break.
That's Jane Golden, the founder and executive director of Mural Arts Philadelphia. We spoke at WHYY for an audience event where she reflected on her 40-some years of making murals. Coming up, we'll learn more about how Jane turned Philadelphia into Mural City, about getting fired and hired repeatedly by her boss, how she convinced Dr. J to pose for a multi-story mural, and how a mural in Grays Ferry helped residents find common ground. You're listening to The Connection on WHYY. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You're listening to a special edition of The Connection, an audience event recorded at WHYY featuring an interview with Jane Golden, the founder and executive director of Mural Arts Philadelphia. That's the organization responsible for making Philadelphia the mural capital of the country. There are more than 4,000 murals reflecting the many stories that make up this diverse and vibrant city. Jane is retiring this summer. When we left off, she was describing moving back to the area from L.A. after being diagnosed with lupus to be with her family and to get treatment. Here you were getting treatment at Hahnemann Hospital in Philadelphia. Right. And Mayor Good at the time had created the Anti-Graffiti Network. And somehow something clicked for you.
Well, I read these articles about anti-graffiti, and in one article it said that he was going to start this art component as part of anti-graffiti. So I was like, that could be my job. Like, sure. So then I went home and I wrote a letter to the mayor. Dear Mayor Good, I would be so honored if I could work in your administration. I attached my resume, some samples of my work from Los Angeles, and then I mailed it. And then I thought, well, I may never hear from him ever because he is a mayor of a big city. So, but then I remember a few weeks after that when I came home from the movies and my dad was on the porch. He was so excited and he said, you're not going to believe who called tonight. This man named Oliver Franklin, who is the deputy city representative for arts and culture for Mayor Good. And he would like you to call him tomorrow. And so I did. I think I woke up at 3 a.m, 4 or 5 a.m. I was just calling Oliver Franklin like at dawn. And I'm like, he wasn't answering. And then when I got him on the phone, he said, oh, what a coincidence. I know your boss in Los Angeles. So I said, really, Judy Baca? So I said, he goes, and I already called her and asked her about you. And I could feel my spine stiffen because I can wear people out. This is true.
Really?
So I said, what did she say? And I could feel my voice sort of cracking. He goes, well, actually, she said two things about you. I'm like, oh, two things. So one was, Jane Golden is the most tenacious person I've ever met, and she can wear people out. So I'm like, okay, let's hope for number two.
Yeah.
And number two is you should absolutely hire her.
Oh,
I was like, oh.
Wow.
So then I came up for a visit, and I saw Oliver. And, oh, that's when I met Lisa Nutter. She had just been hired by Oliver Franklin. And then Oliver sent me over to talk to Tim Spencer, and I had this very short conversation with Tim Spencer. He looked at my resume, and he said, well, he said, you're hired. If you want the job, it's $12,000. It's a part-time job. It's like $12,000 a year, and you're going to transfer the negative energy of graffiti writers to something positive. Like, good luck. and then we started doing small murals, and then I guess Wilson Good really wanted the Spring Garden Street Bridge mural painted, and he said somebody famous was coming into the city. I think it was Jesse Jackson. Anyway, he goes, the mayor says if you can do this bridge with the kids from Mantua in 3 weeks, you could have a full-time job. So I was like, done. I'm getting this full-time job. And we worked there under flashlights, weekends. We had like a real rhythm going, and we painted, and we did it. And then I got and Wilson Good says, well, I think I owe you something. And I'm like, and I got my full-time job.
That's
for $15,000 a year.
For $15,000, right. The royal sum of that. But what I love about, there's so much I love about what you have done, and certainly mural arts, is seeing the artists. I mean, back in those days, graffiti artists were seen as sketchy individuals, maybe even criminals. You saw something else. You saw their creativity. You saw beauty in the letters, the images that they would put illegally, you know, on buildings. But you saw something that many other people didn't see.
I did. And I saw them as people, right? So I started meeting them, and they were first sort of cagey about it, and then because we were the Anti-Graffiti Network, but when they opened up their black books and I saw their sense of drawing and design and color and anatomy as if they'd gone to art school, but they hadn't, and realized like how few opportunities a lot of the young people had, and like, you know, and so I would say to them, look, I can't teach you how to use spray paint. You're all really good at that. But right. here you could get a job and we could learn all these other things about how to make murals and how to build scaffolding and how to transfer a design onto a wall. And, you know, they became so interested. And I would say they became almost like family.
Wow.
And the field representatives, I really love the community organizers I work with, but they called me a sympathizer. And I was just like, and today, in fact, the guy who I love who runs the graffiti abatement team's Clip in the city, he was saying when I first met Jane Golden, you know, in the 90s, like she was saying, oh, they're artists. And he's like, they're vandals. And I'm like, they're artists and they're vandals. And we would go back and forth like that. But I really believed in them and believed in their talent. And just, I saw nothing but potential. And everything went wrong in anti-graffiti. I'm telling you, our scaffolding got stolen. Our paint got stolen. I had an undercover police car. When you beep the horn, the trunk flew open. Like, we had a very little budget. I was always arguing with my former boss, may he rest in peace, about tokens, about brushes, about mural paint, about sealer. Like, and I was getting fired, like, all the time. He would say, Jane Golden, you're fired. And I'd be like, fine. And I'd walk down the hall, take a drink of the water fountain, and he'd go, Jane Golden, come back. And I'd go, fine. And I'd come back. But I was like the employee. I was a difficult employee, though, because I was sort of a rogue player. And but we were getting somewhere. We had our little art unit, and I loved it. And I love them. And it's really mutuality, because they might have learned from me, but I was learning from them all the time.
Well, think of Anti-Graffiti Network, Mural Arts, Philadelphia. I mean, just even the name change tells you where your head was at, where you wanted to take this creativity.
Right, because we always saw that, you know, we like believed in the power of art. And the thing about anti-graffiti, I have to say, it was more like a youth development program. We had thousands of young people painting murals in the summers. We had hundreds of kids working like jobs with good wages, like year round. It was sort of an incredible program when you think about the federal, the state, and the city government coming together to do something on behalf of young people that was real, that had integrity, and that was sustained over long periods of time. Every lesson that I brought to mural arts, I learned from anti-graffiti. Honestly, it was like getting 3 graduate degrees in how you work with communities, how you work with young people, and how you do it right.
Yes, that deserves applause. I looked at so many murals over the last couple of days, and I know the Dr. J mural that's on Ridge Avenue, that was really a very pivotal mural. It's, what, 3-4 stories tall. Mm-hmm. It was done by a guy that you knew from L.A.,
yeah.
Kent Twitchell.
Right.
And he did it, and it's gorgeous and overpowering. And
it's beautiful.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
Yes.
Look, I met Kent in L.A., and I was working on some murals, and he said, look, I need an assistant for this 10-story mural I'm doing of the artist Ed Ruscha in downtown L.A. I said, count me in. I didn't realize that being an assistant meant I had to go down to downtown LA in the middle of the night and attach myself. I had a lifeline and be on this like scary, scary scaffolding, swing stage actually, and prime the wall. That was my job. And I would call the scaffolding company. I would call them all the time and go, I think I'm in trouble. And they were like, well, we were there last night. I think things are good. And I'm like, okay, all right.
In trouble, and then it was creaky or tilting?
Well, it was just a bucket. I was in a little bucket, and I was attached to something on the roof. It was just like my mother kept saying, you walk where angels fear to tread. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm hanging 10 stories in the air. It's fine. So my parents are like, you should have gone to law school. So, so Kent and I bonded over that. So when I came to the Anti-Graffiti Network, I would always show all the kids like all the murals from LA, San Francisco, and Chicago. And they were like, that dude right there, we want him to come to Philly. So I'm like, all right, let's call him. So then we called him. And he said, well, I would come to Philadelphia if I could do Dr. J in a suit. So we're like, Dr. J in a suit sounds great to us, right? And so then I was like, oh, how do we can't, who knows Dr. J? So a field representative heard me, and he said, oh, I know his agent. I'm like, you do? Like, how random is that? And so he called the agent. He was shooting a TV commercial in Center City, and I talked to the agent. The agent says, you have 3 minutes. So I go, shoo. I go in. I'm like, oh, Dr. J, my name is Jane Golden. I work with kids. I work with communities. We do good deeds every day. And he's like, slow down. And he's like, what is it you're asking of me?
There's a theme here. I can hear. Yeah, no, go ahead.
What do you want of me? I said, we want you to pose for a mural. He goes, that's great. And I said, and we'd like you to come to the dedication. He said, great. And so, but when he posed, like I brought like all these kids to meet Dr. J. So everybody's like talking a mile a minute. Dr. J walks in. And it's like, we know he's tall, but he's tall. Yeah. And he comes in and everybody's like, and then he was so nice to everybody and so gracious, and he posed and came to the dedication. But the thing is, it was a pivotal moment for us because people started to believe in the quality of the work.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the process of working with communities, because Mural Arts is, yes, about murals, but it's about neighborhoods and streets telling stories about themselves, the residents who live there, and how out of that process you create a mural.
You know, I was talking to someone today about this work. I think that artists are like magicians because it's really hard to balance content and aesthetics. And really, I think a muralist is almost like a film editor, that you're sifting through all these ideas and you have to come up with something that is visually cohesive. And that is really not easy to do. But I think over the years, the muralists in our city have learned to do that. It's like a humbling experience to do this job in a way, because you just have to open yourself up to feedback and to listen and to bring people together who maybe have not ever come together. And sometimes there's even acrimony. And how do you do it? And I think the gift of anti-graffiti, of the many gifts, one was learning from all the community organizers. You go in, you don't really have the answers, go in with questions, you know, go in with, as my dad would say, great humility, and then you listen. And then I think what happened over the years after we became Mural Arts is that there was even a greater shift towards quality and really being clear with community that, look, we want to hear what you have to say, but this is the artist and they have a lot to say. And their vision is really important and has to really, that you've got to give them the power that they deserve. And we will also provide that to you. So how these two entities that have never really worked together come up with something magnificent is really the magic and the wonder of public art making.
I would imagine for an artist who normally probably works by themselves in a studio somewhere to be out in public, first of all, talking to neighbors and trying to figure out what are we going to create, and then be out, you know, on a wall making a mural is such a very public thing to do.
It's public. It's hard. You're vulnerable. I mean, you have, like, you've got to take critique.
I was going to say, you've got critics walking by.
Yeah. I mean, and it's all the time. But see, I think that nothing made me happier than being on scaffolding. There were days at Anti-Graffiti when I would come home that I would say to myself, I just don't want this to ever end.
Wow.
I loved it so much, like talking to people, engaging with people, like really listening to people, like all the things I learned from community leaders all over the city that really became like family to me. And then continue, like at Wall Ball this year, like there were many people there that I knew from back in the day who have stayed connected. It's like a huge network of people all throughout the city that is Mural Arts.
Well, do you drive or walk or even bike around the city and say, oh, that would be a really good wall?
Incessantly.
Incessantly, right.
Without a stop. I mean, it's like, it's really, in other cities, I see walls. I see walls everywhere.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was somewhere with my husband and we were, you know, having dinner. And then we were walking. It was around 12th and Vine. I'm like, I can't believe it. I miss these walls. And he's like walking ahead. He goes, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm taking down addresses. Oh, but anyway, but there's something fascinating about looking at a city through the lens of public art and the potential for public art.
What I think is also so fascinating about murals, in particular painted murals, is they can be weathered, buildings can be taken down, neighborhoods can change, that there's something, or it could be something, very ephemeral about creating a mural, knowing that over time it's going to look different. How do you see that, and how do you what do you protect, and what do you sort of let go to nature and the elements?
Well, as you know, we have a huge collection, and we have a very small restoration division, and we have we work with the Public Art Archive, so about 2,000 of the 4,400 murals are well documented, and they help drive our decisions, this database about what we're going to fix up. So sometimes murals just need to go to mural heaven because they're just deteriorated.
Right.
More importantly, it's old architecture in the city, so there could be leaks and we just don't know about it. The flashing can be bad. We have to just prepare ourselves for that. But nobody wants a mural to go away, even when a mural looks bad.
Right.
And people will say, yeah, please don't touch the mural. And then we also have to be prepared for developers, people building in front of a mural, people tearing down a mural. And we're just on a mission to try to have developers notify us before before they do that, because look, the murals in the city, there's no doubt about it, they're civic assets. We're known internationally as the city of murals. People come here from all over the world. It's a big deal. And I was a witness to the collection of murals in LA going away because nobody was carrying that torch, because that the program lost its city funding, murals got graffiti, no one tended to them. And so it's like, oh no, this is never going to happen in Philadelphia. We, like, if I ran a museum in this city, I'd be concerned about the collection. Well, we think about this collection all the time. So we try to restore what we can. We're very eager. We work quickly and efficiently. And then some murals we have to say goodbye to. And then, you know, we have tapped into a huge chord of people loving art in this city. So when murals go away, we hear, you know, we feel like our lives are being erased. So we just use that with developers and say, look, maybe the murals got to go. I don't want to stand in the way of new housing. I mean, we don't want to stop economic development. On the other hand, we can multitask in our city. We can hold both things. We can hold housing and we can hold public art. You need both things to make a city sing.
Talk a bit, if you could, about the Peace mural in Grays Ferry, because that was, I know, part of your mantra, if I can put it that way, is that art ignites change. And this was back in a part of the city.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Where there were some racial tensions. This was back in, I think, the 1990s. And you and other people with mural arts came together to create something that would hopefully bring the community together with hands, you know, resting on top of each other, making almost like a circle.
Well, we had a grant from the William Penn Foundation to do several murals about Quaker history and philosophy. At that time, Grays Ferry was just blowing up. It was just so many divisions. And we went to Ed Rendell and we said that we thought we should do a Peace mural in Grays Ferry. And he was like, I don't think so. I don't think that's a good idea at all. And we talked to, you know, Mike DeBiardinas, who's the wonderful commissioner
of the recreation department.
Back then, yeah. A great boss. And we convinced Mike that we should do this. And so we went, I worked with a deputy mayor, Lillian Ray. She's black, I'm obviously white. And we went door to door, talked to people. Some people slammed the door in our face. Some people said they would talk to us. And it came to be that people wanted a mural of hands. And so my husband, who's a documentary filmmaker, he suggested, why don't you use real people's hands? And so we put a call out, like, lend us your hand and come to this church. And first nobody came, then people came. Yeah. And then we snapped the photograph, digitized it, projected it on the wall at night. We had no idea what we were doing. The scaffolding was super rickety. My husband kept saying, everybody's, you're going to die. Like, that scaffolding, it looks terrible. It's like, so, but we were so determined. And we did this mural. And what was so interesting, first people came down and they said, is this a movie? We said, oh no, it's a mural. And then people were talking to each other, like, who had not talked to each other. They would talk to us, then talk to each other, and then the dedication was the most integrated event down there. And then what was so interesting, Marty, is that from years I co-taught a class at Penn, and we would have community leaders come talk to the students. And the people from Grays Ferry talked about how, while this just didn't solve everything, I think what murals do is they show us the powerful catalytic role that art can play in the life of the city, because people said the mural shifted the conversation. Like, it just, people started thinking about housing and other things where there was commonality rather than division. And sometimes it's very subtle. This is nuanced work, but you can start to see a change occurring that is so powerful and sometimes quiet, but you can build on that, and that can lead to real change. And that is absolutely profound.
That's Jane Golden, the founder and executive director of Mural Arts Philadelphia. We've been talking about how she turned the city into the mural capital of the country. Coming up, we'll talk about the connection between art and restorative justice, her decision to retire, and why she is wired for public service. I'm Artie Moscowane, and you're listening to The Connection on WHYY. I'm Artie Moscowane, and you're listening to The Connection on WHYY. We're playing back my interview with Jane Golden. She's the founder and executive director of Mural Arts Philadelphia. We recorded our conversation earlier this week at WHYY before a sold-out audience. While we talked, the monitors in the room displayed images of some of the murals, showing their bold beauty and unique styles. Coming up, Jane will reference Common Threads, which covers the entire side of a building on Broad Street, showing young people posing like historical figures. We'll also discuss Healing Walls, depicting inmates and victims' struggles with crime. Mural Arts is about more than making murals. It also focuses on youth education, mental and behavioral health, and restorative justice. And even restorative justice, I know that's a big part of Mural Arts program or Mural Arts Philadelphia, working with inmates and sometimes even with victims and communities that have had to deal with the problem of violence and gun violence. How do you work with people who are in prison and people who are outside of prison?
You know, I think that my life has been changed by so much of what I've encountered at Mural Arts. And working in the prison has certainly been humbling, you know, because it makes you think about, like, everybody's made mistakes. Mm-hmm. And how do we want to be judged? And when is the judgment enough? And we have a very punitive society. And so I never really thought about working in prison until I was invited by an art therapist to go to Greaterford Prison. And, you know, walking down that long corridor, I had to confront my own bias. Like, I don't think I really wanted to be there. We'd only worked with kids and done murals. It was, like, out of my comfort zone. And then in the class, I showed work of the work we had done. And they said, you know, if only we'd had a Mural Arts or an anti-graffiti network, maybe we wouldn't be here. But then one man said, like, his life went dark at age 10. And I thought about the kids that we work with, and I thought about, well, why wouldn't we work in a prison? And then I like never say no to anyone. It's like people always ask. They asked for us to visit. Then they asked if we would do a small mural. Then we did a small mural that the men kept changing. And then I was like, well, this is like the Sistine Chapel. Like, what is going on here? This mural is going to take like 10 years. Yeah. And they were like, well, we know if it gets finished, you won't come back. Uh-huh. And they were convinced that this would be it. And they said, you know, we see people, and they call them tourists. They said people who come in and they do a project, they put it on their resume, they get a grant, and then they disappear. And I was like, well, that's not going to be us. And so we developed this program. And then at one point, they designed a curriculum for our art education program that under Mayor Street started to expand. We started to work with kids struggling with truancy and delinquency, working in the Juvenile Justice Service Center. And then we started working in the county jail. So this whole area of mural arts really sort of took root. But, you know, it's like when I was growing up, like, I was lucky. Like, I know I talked about my parents. I talked about the opportunities. It was not a mystery for me to think about art. But everybody should have art. And it's a matter of equity. And so I think that everybody should have it. And the program should be excellent. And we should be, like, not, like, tolerant of mediocrity. And that should be the way it is. And, you know, when I think about, like, people are, why are you working in a prison? You know, like, and I'm like, well, a high percentage of people are going to get out. Right. And murals are healing. And they're restorative. And it rejuvenates people. And more importantly, it's a redemptive act. And for the men who are there, I mean, the crime they committed was 30, 40 years ago. And it's like, isn't it better? They're creating murals to make Philadelphia beautiful. And they're connecting with their kids in a way they never had before. They said, our kids are calling me saying, I'm so proud of you. And it's just it's like liberation. Because one guy said to me, this might be my life. It does not have to be their life. And it's, and then
children.
Many of the guys who've gotten out have worked with us, have gone on to work at the Carnegie Institute, Haverford College. One, Luis Gonzalez, won a Pulitzer Prize. Jesse Crimes, you know, like, famous now. His work is unaffordable. I could go on and on and on about people whose lives have been deeply, deeply transformed. But that also informed our work with young people, made us go deeper, like, have much more depth and breadth. It's just like we were just on fire to make sure that people had access to art. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Again. But I'm thinking, because so much of this mural creation is about conversation, people talking to each other, that when dealing with people, I guess, on both sides of a crime, that can be a very raw, can be very revealing, but it can be a very difficult conversation to have.
Extremely difficult. That's a really great question, because I want to say that at times I think we go into things possibly with some naivete, but I think we're always open to course correcting and learning from things that don't work out.
Yeah.
And so when we started Healing Walls, that idea, because the men were like, we want to do murals on the outside. At first I was like, well, I think that's over my pay grade to get you out. Like, that's
right.
One thing. I said, but this, so they were like, no, you work on Polytap. So I was like, that's true. So we could do outdoor murals. Then they said they wanted to work with victims. And I went to the prison society. I talked to the DA's office and they're like, this is super tricky, Jane.
Yeah.
And, but then we got people, victims advocates and victims who wanted to participate. And the goal was to bring people together to talk about the impact of violent crime and what could we do together to make Philadelphia a healthier, safer city. This was 2008. 2007, and but when people painted together in the auditorium of the prison, which was a huge room, right, twice the size of this room, there at every table there were some victims and men in the class, and the power dynamics totally shifted because the people that knew how to paint were the men.
Oh, wow.
And they would say, so people would say, well, I don't know how to use this brush, or could, you know, I don't know about mixing the paint. They'd say, oh, no problem. I'll let you know. And then when I walked around, then people started to have deeper conversations about their lives and see what they had in common rather than not. And by the end of the project, like, everybody had changed. I think the men started to really feel like, oh, I understand why the victims' advocates are so angry and why the deep pain that the victims, and these were not their direct victims, right, but why the pain that the victims carry. And for the victims' advocates, they were like, you know, sometimes we feel we're locked in to being so punitive that, and some of them actually even changed their line of work, and a few of them went into to work with Catholic social services.
That's an amazing story. I mean, to think what art can do and, and certainly has done through human history. You have described the murals, and they're, I keep saying more than 4,000, but do you have an exact number? Do you know?
It's like 4,400 indoor and outdoor, big and little.
Okay.
I don't know, big and little. 4,000, I just always add that.
All
I'm
right.
not sure that's
a lot. You have described it as a kind of autobiography of the city, that if each mural is a story, we have 4,400 stories that are living all across the city.
Yeah, that's true, because people are involved. Valerie Still is here tonight, and we did this really beautiful mural that's a tribute to William Still, the Still family.
Oh.
And I didn't study William Still when I was coming up. And there's a lot of history that is missed. You can find that history on walls throughout our city.
Yeah.
And that is something that is beautiful and important. And I think we should never stop being able to do that. There are murals of people's heroes. There are murals of block captains. There are murals of people who have passed. There are murals of people's dreams. They are poignant. They are personal. Sometimes they are intimate. And sometimes they are bold and sweeping.
Yeah.
But wherever they are, there is a connection to the people who live in this city. And even when it's an artist like Amy Sherald, or when Hank Willis Thomas did something here, or the big names, or Jesse Crimes is doing a big project, a quilt, there is a connection. There is a thread that runs through mural arts out into the community and onto that wall.
Yeah.
And it sometimes is not explicit or bold at all, but it is there. And I think it's why people in the city of Philadelphia feel a great ownership about this collection. This collection belongs to them. It was never, ever about one person, about me. And it's not even about mural arts. It's about our ability to turn this over to people and let it live on. This work should live on as an icon, as a landmark, as a continual source of pride and inspiration, and a reflection back to people that their lives matter.
This feels like a really stupid question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you have a favorite? And I don't mean favorite, but is there a mural that you, that just seems to resonate with you, that you go back to and find either comfort or inspiration or connection or something? And you can say no, it's fine, because it's,
well,
a lot to choose from.
You know, it's interesting, because some of our work, actually, we've done some very profound, interesting projects that are not even murals, because many years ago we said, oh, what is muralism in the 21st century? And it's not only about a fixed object. It could be performance. It could be dance. It could be writing. It could be photography. And so some of the projects that we've done that are like having 1,000 people come together for a meal in front of the municipal services building, and we had these two fabulous artists. It was all about access to healthy food. I'm like, how in the world did this happen? And all these people are talking to each other. But for me, I think this mural is particularly poignant and important,
yeah,
just because what it telegraphed to people about the beauty and the wonder that public art is, and the dignity and respect it gives our young people, which is something that drives me so strongly. But I'm also, there's so many murals flashing in front on this, you know, on the screens that I just, oh, I love that one. I love this one. I love that one. So, I mean, I think I'm really in love with the art form, and I love being part of an organization that provides artists, continually provides artists with a platform to create work in public space.
You have decided to retire, and it's a, I can only imagine for you, Jane Golden, that's a really difficult decision, but obviously you came to some kind of conclusion. Help us understand your thinking. What was the thinking that went into saying, because it's clear you're still as passionate about mural arts as you ever were.
So, you know, my husband is the youngest of eight, and he lost a few siblings over the last few years. And he was like, are you always going to work like 1,000 hours a week? Which I don't seem to know how to not do that. Right. So I said, well, I would think about leaving. But I think I thought about it in a very theoretical way. And then I realized that I needed to probably move from theoretical to reality. And so I set a date, changed the date, set a date, changed the date. And then realized I really needed to just to set a date, as painful as that was. So, you know, it's been the privilege of a lifetime to do this work. I really feel that. There's not a day that I felt that I didn't feel lucky to wake up to do work that is meaningful, that has an impact in the world, I think. It's been a real gift.
Yeah.
And there's that other part of me that feels like it's time to make space for someone else. It's probably the hardest thing. I've dealt with a lot of hard things in my life.
Right.
This is probably the hardest.
When you look at, you know, and the, we have murals flashing around us as we're talking here. As you look, do you feel a sense of accomplishment? Not completion, but accomplishment to say, I helped do this. I helped make this happen.
You know, I wish I could answer that as a yes. But I think I carry, you know, the engine in me runs like high, and it is an engine that is, that. So I feel that, and then I have ever-present angst. So I like, is it enough? Should we have done this differently? What should we, and then people come up to me all the time with ideas, and I'm like, oh yeah, we should do that, we should do this. So I don't stay in that place of, isn't this great complacency or comfort very long, which I wish maybe I should meditate and, My husband keeps suggesting that. It never works for me. I'm like, I'm done.
Yeah, right.
So
exactly.
It's like, so I feel like a yearning for, you know, I think the search for social justice goes on. And I think that art plays a role in that. And I feel there's a part of me that yearns to do more. I feel proud of what we've accomplished. I feel proud when artists come up to me. I ran into a bunch of young artists the other day, and they were so like, you know, mural arts has meant so much, and it's been so transformational. Like, that means something. It does. But then I'll go into the place of, oh, we need to do this more. We need more artists working. We need to do more work, you know. So I know I'm committed. In some way, I'm going to figure out whatever my next step is. To be connected to artists and community and our city. I love our city with all my heart, and I'm committed to figuring out the path forward where I can make a difference.
Would you ever consider running for office or running for city council?
I think about it. You know, I'm somebody who, like, I think I would be, like, good at it, you know, because I'm sort of relentless. And I'd be like a good campaigner, but I'd be because I feel now we work at the behest of the citizens of Philadelphia. Like, I feel, I always say this, like, this job is not a job. It's a moral imperative to do right by citizens. So I sort of have, like, I'm sort of wired for public service. So I think about it. I mean, I do. I mean, I don't know whether I would do it, but I have to think fast if I'm going to do it. But I don't know. Like, but it does cross my mind sometimes. When I went to the polling place to vote, people are like, you should run for city council. And I'm like, I didn't even suggest it to them. They just said it. They said, yeah. Oh, you have name recognition.
But Jane, let me ask you something. The thing that I find so inspiring about your life is that it doesn't feel like you had exactly a game plan. That things happened. You know, you bumped into Jane Fonda, you bumped into Dr. J. The things happened. You obviously saw the opportunity and grabbed it, but it didn't feel like you had, you know, we're going to go from A to B to C to D to E.
You know, you're right, but I think what's really interesting, two things I want to say. I credit my parents for encouraging me to embrace intuition and to be open to new possibilities and to follow my heart. Mm-hmm. And I'll be forever grateful to my wonderful brother, who, after I got into law school, talked me out of it. And then I remember
he's a lawyer, right?
And he's a lawyer.
Yeah.
A very good lawyer. And my dad telling me, he said, you should have the courage to not go to law school and to follow your heart. And, you know, so I think in some way I was able to figure out my path, but having really good advice really helped along the way. And so, but I didn't, I mean, when I got out of Stanford, I didn't have, there was not a blueprint for my life, but thankfully I was able to discover the power of art and put it to work across Philadelphia.
Jane Golden, thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. And thank you all for coming out tonight. That was Jane Golden, founder and executive director of Mural Arts Philadelphia, recorded earlier this week at a sold-out event at WHYY. You can follow The Connection on Instagram and Facebook. Also, check out our website, whyy.org/theconnection, for information about upcoming shows and to sign up for our newsletter. Thanks to Yvette Sizer for organizing this event and handling all the moving parts. Thanks to our two engineers who recorded the interview, Paul Parmalee and Benjamin Krall. Al Banks is The Connection engineer. Debbie Builder produces the show. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for listening.